Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, in cooperation with Scout.com, Warnest.com, and Frat House Sports, this is Inside the War Nest, the show made by Philadelphia Eagles fans for Philadelphia Eagles fans. Have a comment or question? Call us live on the air, 347-826-9964. That's 347-826-9964. And now, to take you through the week that was and the week to come in Eagles football, here are your armchair generals, Jim Williams and Mike McShane, inside the War Nest.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of Inside the War Nest, presented by Frat House Sports, Scout.com, and of course, WarNest.com. I'm Jim Williams. Oh, what a beautiful time it is to be a Philadelphia Eagle fan. 9-3, three quarters of the season done. You control your own fate when it comes to the division, and you have a chance at maybe getting a bye if you play your cards right in these final four games with a little bit of help. And I've got a little bit of help on my side right now. My co-host, my cohort, Mr. Frat House Sports himself, Mike McShane, joins us. Good evening, Michael.
Jim, how are we doing? What a Thanksgiving feast weekend we had in the NFL this weekend, huh? Wow.
It was a bountiful feast. A cornucopia of football goodness, shall we say.
We'll pull out all of the unnecessary imagery.
Thanksgiving
that we
cliches.
Can.
Yeah. Enough about me vomiting after dinner. We're not going to go there. The turducken left something to boom. Brett Favre turducken. Boom. Boom. But I'm sorry. I missed the John Madden turkey leg award for the best performance on Thanksgiving Day. Don't you?
I agree.
When he had the turkey with like 8 or 10 legs on it, which is just like not even possible hydroponically anything.
It used to really be fun, you know. Now we've got Richard Sherman walking it down the middle of the field.
Yes. Well, there you go. Such is life. But we'll dissect the Eagles' victory in Dallas. Oh, trust me, we will, because there are a few things we have to take a little bit of a microscopic look at. That are a little nitpicky, maybe, but they're legitimate critiques as we head towards the final quarter of the season. We also will be welcoming in Rob Rang. He's the contributor who will be joining us from SeahawkFootball.com, Scout.com's official Seattle website, talking about this big game. I'm billing it as the Bird Bowl because, well, that's what it is, the Bird Bowl between the Eagles and the Seahawks at the Link on Sunday afternoon. Late game, by the way, 4:25. Let the record state that. But in between all that, we have plenty of time to talk with you good folks. Chat room's giving us problems. That's a shocker, but that's okay. You're also able to join us on the phone if you have a question, a comment for me, for Mike, for our guest Rob Rang. You can call in 347-826-9964. That's area code 347-826-9964. If you're listening live, you can also click the Skype button and boom, you're right in touch with us just that quick. Just that easy. What do you think we get to?
It does look like the chat room's working at this point.
It does look like it's working?
Yeah, it's up. Yep.
Because for some reason it's not working on my end. That's kind of bizarre.
We're looking good over here. So there are some people too in there, so I can see that.
Well, there you go. And to those of you who are in the chat room, welcome aboard. Much appreciated. Ah, there we go. Brandon and Uncle Mark, I believe they are in there. I finally opened the chat in an auxiliary area. That's probably why. Now we're good. So you want to give us a comment or a question, by all means do so in the chat or give us a call, 347-826-9964. But let's start off with the obvious. We've been talking about the term statement game over most of these many weeks we've been on the air, Michael. Is this really Philadelphia statement game? And I will play devil's advocate here. Mark Eckel from NJ.com is of the belief this is not necessarily the statement game that everybody thinks it is, because these are the Dallas Cowboys. This is a team that historically swoons this time of year, and they may not be as good as their record indicates. Is this a statement victory for Philadelphia, their Thanksgiving performance?
to me, there's no doubt, you know, and you and I have talked about this, as you just pointed out. This is our seventh program, and there were a couple of games that came up in between there where, Jim, you were actually the one that said, well, this could be a statement game. We had talked about the possibility of Green Bay being a statement game. I know that there was one in particular where you brought it up and said, you know, this could be a statement. I disagreed with you that it listen, Philadelphia going into Dallas, okay, on Thanksgiving, where Dallas has historically done well, okay? They both had the exact same identical record in the NFC East. This is, without a doubt, this was a statement game. And, you know, they didn't win it by, you know, 2 points or a field goal. They won 33-10. That was
It was over before it began in many respects, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was
absolutely a statement game. Now, you know, look, we've got two in a row because the one we got coming up, that's a real statement. You could call the one coming up, if that one goes our way, that's an exclamation point game.
It's the Ric Flair motto right now, and I know you're a big wrestling fan, but you know what he used to say. You're old enough to at least have heard it once or twice. To be the man... The man, and the man is Seattle. I mean, yes, they haven't been up to championship form until recently, but they're still the reigning champs. You beat that team, then you're making your mark in the NFC a little bit. And we'll talk about that when we bring in Rob in about 25 minutes here on Inside the War Nest. Again, you're welcome to call in 347-826-9964. Weigh in on the Eagles. Was that a statement victory for Philadelphia in Arlington, Texas on Thanksgiving Day? Mike believes so. I believe so as well. And it really was a statement game for Mark Sanchez, who, in my humble opinion, may have played, though the stats may not show it out, his best game of football, maybe in his career. And the reason I say that is he was the perfect game manager. 20 of 29, he completed 69% of his passes for 217 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions. Yes, he had a fumble, but no harm, no foul. QB rating of 102.2. He did what we've been talking about, what I've been saying since he took over at quarterback for the injured Nick Foles. He does not need to be phenomenal, Mike. He just needs to manage the game effectively.
Yep. Well, two things came out of it. First of all, we saw, from my perspective, two things came out of it. We saw him drive the car. That's all we asked him to do. We were saying that right here on this program a couple of weeks ago. All he has to do is get in and navigate the vehicle. Don't get in any accidents. He did a very, very good job of that on the road. This was a game that a lot of people were worried about because it was the Eagles and it was Tony Romo on the road. It was also the second year anniversary of, I'm not going to mention it, but...
Yeah.
The other thing that I looked at, and you know this from me, I'm a stats guy, I look at completion percentage. This was a Mark Sanchez we have not really seen up to this point. We were seeing a Mark Sanchez in the high 50% completion percentage. Now, he had almost 70% completion. That's what we need him to do. Game manager is a perfect term.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he was. He managed everything efficiently, and he threw pretty efficiently as well. You take a look at the box score a little bit. He spread the ball around very nicely. Macklin got in on the act for a couple of big ones, a 58-yard gain. He actually has the most big gains of anybody in the National Football League. I believe he has 650-plus-yard receptions this season off the charts. Jordan Matthews got into the act, got the lone touchdown reception. Riley Cooper, we'll talk about him in a moment. But one thing I want to go back to is the situation with the running game. Now, it's good and it's bad. Let's tackle the good. We had a fairly balanced offense on display in Dallas, where the Eagles ran for 256 yards compared to throwing the ball for 217, but in terms of total plays, it was as balanced as you can get it under Chip Kelly. Your thoughts on the fact that they actually, well, ran the ball a little bit and showed some commitment to the running game?
And they didn't give up. That was the other thing that was key, because that's what you see so often from the Philadelphia Eagles, is they'll try it for a quarter, and if it's not working to its optimum, or at least to what they want it to be, all of a sudden you see them bail on it. And they didn't bail on it. They stuck with it and stuck with it and stuck with it against a Dallas team that's pretty good against the rush. So, really great game plan. You know, be perfectly honest with you, I think that's what I think that's what we're going to need against Seattle on Sunday is almost an identical game plan to what we saw with Dallas. So, and McCoy, well, I don't know.
He found the hole.
Jim,
he hit the hole.
He's been a paradox all season long. I can't explain it, but hey, good for us. He had a great game. 159 yards. My goodness. Mm-hmm.
He had himself a game, but the other side of it, and I've been talking about this for the last week or two, believing that Darren Sproles should get more carries. I'm not saying he should take over for McCoy. I'm not saying that. But he should get, say, maybe 10 to 15 carries a game. He got a carry in the first quarter for 13 yards. That's it. What gives in your estimation?
Listen, I'd be happy to see him get 10 because we know what the guy's capable of doing when he can get 10.
Absolutely.
I don't know. I really, really don't know. I mean, you know, I would love to have Chip Kelly right here on the line with us. Chip, if you're listening, 347-826-9964. And we could ask him, you know, why. And, you know, I know that you tune in to all the press conferences. I do as well.
I do, yeah.
But you're probably paying attention to him a lot more than I am. I kind of have it on. It's back there, you know, and I'm doing other things that I'm listening. I'm doing it. You're writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the thing that drives me nuts, Jim, I don't even hear the media ask Chip about it.
Yeah.
You know, why the disparagement? Why is there this disparagement there?
That's a fair question, and I really don't know the answer. I really don't know the answer. We have a call. Shall we take it?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go. I will let the caller identify themselves. What do you mean? Oh, they dropped?
Nope.
I thought they
dropped
off. They dropped off at the last second. M. McClain,
Jim,
come back in.
Jim, you scared them away.
I wasn't trying to.
What the heck are you doing over there?
I wasn't trying to. I thought we had a call on the line via the Skype, and maybe it was a tech issue on their end. Call back. We'd love to talk with you about the Eagles, about the Seahawks, about the Cowboys even over the course of this. But, yeah, that's a question that has not been broached and approached at by the media, and that kind of befuddles me a little bit because you have a guy in Darren Sproles who can be the perfect two to the 1-2 combination that is McCoy and Sproles. He can keep the defense off balance because he has a different kind of explosive presence than LeSean McCoy. So I'm not saying they should be a 50-50 like a Thunder and Lightning with Waters and Garner back in the day. I'm not saying that, but use him to keep the offense honest. I mean, for goodness sakes, they used Josh Huff because Chris Polk was injured in garbage time. So if they're willing to give as many carries to Huff as they are to Sproles, I mean, come on, you have the weapon. I mean, do you think maybe it comes down to they don't want him to risk injury because he's so vital on special teams?
Well, that's a great point. However, I look at it the complete opposite. I think a player is more apt to get injured on special teams than they would playing, say, you know, in tandem with McCoy or playing McCoy's role back there. I think there's a much greater chance of Sproles getting injured running kicks back and punts. Mm-hmm. Take a look, though. What the Eagles are doing is exactly what New Orleans did to Sproles. That's all that New Orleans used him for, and really in the final year used him even sparingly, even on special teams. But for the most part, he was a special teams expert, and that's all he was.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how things work themselves out over the course of the next few days. I'd like to see Sproles get a few more carries. If you disagree with me, call in, 347-826-9964. Hit us up on Skype. We're in a chat room. We have Brandon, and we have Uncle Mark, and we have a guest, and we have me, and we have you, and we have people from throughout the world, throughout the country, throughout the universe, listening in. Weigh in, by all means, and let us know what you're thinking of, what your thoughts are in regards to the Eagles, not just within the NFC East, but in the NFL at large. Are they now a contender after that win in Dallas? That's a question we might want to pose. And in about 15 minutes, we'll pose plenty of questions to Rob Rang from SeahawkFootball.com as we preview the big game Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field between the Birds and the Birds. Let's talk about one thing that definitely needs to improve, and that one thing that definitely needs to improve is the Eagles' red zone inefficiency. And we've talked about this for week after week now. They went 1-for-5 in Dallas, yet still put up 33 points. It was a Thanksgiving miracle. There was some. It was turducken at its finest. The Eagles can't afford to do this against good teams. Again, coming back to my point, maybe Dallas isn't as good as their record indicates, as we saw on Thanksgiving Day. How do they counteract this? I mean, is it Sanchez? Is it the play calling of Pat Shurmur and Chip Kelly? What are the vibes you're getting on what's going on in the red zone?
We were seeing the inefficiency of it, though, back when Foles was there, so you can't really say that it's Sanchez.
Right.
Excuse me. The problem that, and, you know, I was watching it closely on Thursday, and it just seemed, you know, play series after series after series, we're getting inside the red zone, and we're ending up having to kick the field goal. I don't get it. Here's one thing I did notice. I don't like the play calling. That's one thing. All right? Mm-hmm. In other words, it's become very predictable. First down, they're running the ball. Second down, they're running the ball. Third down, they're going. And guess what? It's generally third and long. Third and six, third and seven. That's ineffective. That is an ineffective play call. And they're doing it consistently.
That is by the book play calling at its finest right there. Yeah.
Yeah. I throw on first down, for God's sake. I mean, pick up 5-6 yards right there on the first down. Now you've got yourself a second and four, you know. Mm-hmm. But no, they're running the ball, then pass. And everybody knows, the defenses know exactly what they're doing. We're not going to be able to do that against, we know what kind of a defense we're going up against with Seattle. It's going to be the toughest defense we've seen so far this entire season.
No question.
We can't do that in the – they're going to give us so few opportunities that the opportunities that we get in the red zone, we better darn well be taking advantage of. And that kind of play calling, that predictability in that play calling, I think is what's really killing them. Some people might disagree with me, but that's kind of where I saw it.
Yeah, it's not just the play calling, but it's who gets the call and the ball. More often than not inside the red zone, for whatever reason, they don't target Macklin. They don't target Matthews. They don't target Ertz or Celek. They target Riley Cooper.
Yeah.
Who has had nothing short of an awful year. Why?
Why are they targeting him? You know, somebody's looking out for his contract there and any kind of maybe some perks he's got in the contract. I don't know. I mean, seriously, you know. It's been a horrible – you know what Riley Cooper has had? Riley Cooper has had the type of year that everybody who inside of football knows looked at Riley Cooper. Listen, he's having his best year. Last year was a year he shouldn't have had. Okay? Yeah. That's the bottom line. The worst part was that we went and gave him an extension, all right, based on last year's numbers. Dumb move number one.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody who after they went and gave him that extension, who were looking at it, who had any thoughts on Riley Cooper at all, knew that that was a bad move.
Absolutely, it was just a dumbfounded move, and it's looking even more dumbfounded right now. He went above and beyond the call of duty last year, shall we say, and became a top flight wide receiver for one season and one season only, and now he's tipping passes. He almost did it in the game Thursday, where he tipped one into Dallas's hands. So, it's mind-numbing. Let's talk about something a little bit more positive. Let's talk about the Eagles' defense, which is now starting to really amp up the pressure. They got to Tony Romo, sacked him 4 times, hit him 5 other times. They're now also 12th against the rush, very good against the rush. But I saw some stats from Jeff McClain on Twitter. Let me see if I can bring these up, because it's an enigmatic defense, the Eagles' defense, and let me see if I can explain to you why. Because they're decent against the run, but against the pass, it's kind of half and half. And let me go right to his Twitter account. It's @Jeff_McClain. He writes for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm going to quote him here. Eagles' defense is 26th in the NFL in passing yards allowed, but they are first in completion percentage, holding to 57.2%. They have faced six most attempts, but X plays, the big plays, 40-plus are a factor. The Eagles' pass defense is last in the NFL in plays of 20 yards plus, giving up 52 of them, and 40 yards plus, giving up 14 of those plays, which helps explain the disparity between yards and completion percentage. So it's an enigmatic defense. You either get good pressure, which we got a lot of, and plenty of pressure in the game against Dallas, or it's blown coverage out the nines. Mm-hmm. They're going to need to tighten it up even more against the Seattle team that can beat you a whole bunch of ways Sunday, aren't they?
I'll tell you what I like. Maybe we'll save some of our analysis, our heavy-duty analysis, for when Rob gets in. But
yep.
When you take a look at Seattle, offensively, they're really a ground game. And I like the Eagles' chances against, if we can see the kind of defense that we saw against the Cowboys replicated against Seattle, I like our chances a lot better. When it comes right down to it, they really don't have a tremendously aerial offensive game plan, Seattle. Mm-hmm. It's ground. That's what they're going to do. They're going to run Lynch, and if you let Wilson get loose, we got to make sure we contain that because, let's not forget, this guy's had himself a couple of 100-yard games himself this season, Wilson has. So we got to watch Wilson, and you contain Marshawn Lynch, as we did DeMarco Murray. I mean, wait a minute, he only had 73 yards. Is that the first time in how long that guy didn't break three digits?
Second time all season. And the fewest yards he's been held to all season in a game. Yeah.
And mind you, again, this was all being done down in Dallas. We're going to be doing this weekend at home, where the Eagles are unbeaten so far this season. Mm-hmm. So that's even a better number that we were able to shut DeMarco Murray down to less than 100 yards down in Jerry World. So mm-hmm. I think what it's setting up well for the Eagles. I think defensively it's setting up well. Now
it's definitely something
Wilson,
to hang your hat on.
Yeah. Listen, is Wilson going to fire the ball? Of course he is. He's going to fire the ball. Of course, And then we're going to have to rely upon, as we always have, our, all season long, we're going to have to rely upon our cornerbacks and our secondary, which we know what we got there.
Russell Wilson reminds me of a better version of Colin Kaepernick. He's a bit more efficient passing.
Oh, yes.
He's a bit more efficient rushing, and he has more weapons at his disposal. If Colin Kaepernick was in Seattle, he would flourish, I think. And if Russell Wilson was in San Francisco, he wouldn't have that great a time of it either. So he's in a better situation, and we played San Francisco close on the road. So I think we can play them close at home, Seattle in this case. Coming up Sunday. And we'll talk more about that in a few minutes when Rob Ryan from SeahawkFootball.com joins us. Still plenty of time for your calls, and if you have a question or comment for us or a question or comment for Rob, when he joins us, 347-826-9964, or click the Skype button and join us. By the way, you talked about DeMarco Murray held to 73 yards. It gives me an excuse to also mention that Dez Bryant, big wide receiver, yes, he had a 38-yard reception, but he was held to just 4 grabs for 73 yards, and you know what that means? I think we have to throw up the X, but since I'm a big game show geek, we throw up a different kind of X. Dez Bryant, this is for you.
Yes!
There we go.
Yes! 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 Yes!
Yeah, see.
Very nice.
Throw up the X for Dez Bryant. But really, I mean, and I've been calling out this secondary as long as we've done this show. By and large, the secondary really showed up in Arlington. I mean, and let me ask you this also. It's something that Chip Kelly addressed during his press conferences this week. In fact, he addressed it in Wednesday's press conference, talking about how different officiating crews call games differently. I would think if we had any other officiating crew, the Eagles would have been charged with more pass interference calls, just because these two teams were playing bump and grind defensively, man on man, and it was getting physical. It was getting chippy, no question about it. Do you think that played a factor?
Maybe. I hate to have officiating brought in at any point, even right. speculation of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody was saying it the other day. I forget who it was. Somebody brought it up. I forget what talking head. Nudnik brought it up. It might have been that moron over there on ESPN. I won't mention his name. I think
there
you know which one I'm talking. I think you know which one I'm talking about.
The one who rolls with Screamin' A. Okay.
Yes, you got it. Said that the Eagles had the benefit of the calls on from the Zebras. Yeah, that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, listen, if the officiating crew was keeping the hankies in their pocket, I'm cool with it. I like it. I'm an old schooler anyhow. And if they were keeping the flags tucked away and letting them play the game, and if there was a little extra pushing and what have you going on, and they weren't calling the pass interference, well, the way I see it is this. Both sides got the benefit of it. So,
yeah, a fair question in the chat here, going back to talking about Seattle as we transition a little bit to talk about the game against the Seahawks. You got Marshawn Lynch running for just shy of 1,000 yards on 212 carries, 4.5 yards on average. You got Russell Wilson, who averages 7.5 yards an attempt and has almost 700 yards rushing. Could you make a case that they're the top 1-2 rushing tandem in all of pro football right now?
Tandem, I guess, meaning on the same team. Well, very possible, I suppose. Let me just pull stats here real quick. That might be the case.
I would say by far and away it is, because remember, this is the day and age, and we love to tout this. Well, the NFL loves to tout this. The day and age of the running back has seemingly come and gone. Not really, but they like to make you think that, because it's all about passing first, second, third, fourth, and fifth down, if there was such a thing as fifth down. It's a great weapon to have if you use it properly. And we'll talk with Rob about this when he joins us in a couple of minutes here on Inside the War Nest. That's something the Eagles have got to prepare for, a double whammy running attack of Lynch, who hasn't had the greatest year. He hasn't had a Marshawn Lynch kind of year. Usually when you think of Lynch by now, he's probably up to over 1,300 yards on the ground. And now you hear the news in the past week that Lynch may retire after this season.
Yep. So, I did hear that. I kind of dismissed it for the moment. Dismissing it. But, I'm trying to think of a tandem that you could go to. You know, the only one that's jumping to my mind right now is, although I'm just looking at numbers, and that's not even close.
Right.
But then I was thinking Trent Richardson and Ahmad Bradshaw, but Richardson's had such a horrible year this year that one's not even coming anywhere close to it. So, yeah, I guess you would have to say that would be the
by default. Yeah.
Yep.
Fair question. Thank you, Mark, in the chat for the Sage stats. See, this is nice. We have our listeners contributing content, and that's what we're all about. We're a content source machine here. We just ream content. Ream may not be the right word, but there you go. One other thing I want to talk about before we bring in Rob. We saw this late in the game against Dallas. Let me go back to the Dallas game for a second. And there was a moment, we mentioned Riley Cooper, where Mark Sanchez and Riley Cooper were clearly not on the same page. And now it comes out days after that they were having a spat about dinner.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They couldn't decide whose house they were going to afterward.
Are you kidding me? Is this legitimate, or is this just poppycock?
Well, that's exactly what the coach said, right? In trying to explain what was going on there. Can I tell you what I saw? I liked. And mm-hmm. what you saw was you saw Mark Sanchez actually trying to, or at least appearing to be, a leader.
Yeah.
All right. By telling Cooper, he was, you know, I don't know what created the issue, but let's just say for a moment it was something obvious like, you're out of position, dude.
Yeah.
Which is probably what it was.
And yet they go right to him on the very next play, and he's off in, Neverland.
Yep. Again. Right. And so, of course, and you could speak to it again better than I could, because, as I point out, you cover all the press conferences, but Chip Kelly, you know, kind of just, you know, dusted it off and didn't have really much to say about it, and just kind of made a joke about it, saying that they were they were how did he phrase it? Something to the effect of they were trying to decide what to do about Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes. To which I say, if I was Mark Sanchez, I would have decided to
hit him right between the eyes with a drumstick.
Yeah, there you go. That's perfect. Perfect.
There you go. Thank you, Bobby the Brain Heenan. God bless him.
Outstanding.
Yes. I watched too much of those old Survivor series. I apologize, folks.
You know, listen, I think that's a good thing, seeing that coming from Mark Sanchez. That's a good thing.
He shows leadership. It's definitely a positive trait, something you can hang your hat on going into this week's game against Seattle. And right on cue, let's go behind enemy lines and let's join our guest from Scout.com's Seattle Seahawks-based website, SeahawkFootball.com, Rob Ryang, I believe. I hope I pronounced that correct. Is that like it's pronounced Ryang, Rob?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Like the phone rang, gentlemen.
Just wanted to make sure. Joining us from the Pacific Northwest, near the Emerald City, home of the 12th man and the reigning world champions and the home of our opponent this week, the Seattle Seahawks. Rob Ryang from SeahawkFootball.com joins us inside the War Nest to go behind enemy lines. Good day to you, Rob. How's everything in the Pac Northwest?
Things are going great. Thanks for having me on, guys. Look forward to our conversation here previewing this weekend's game. It looks like it's going to be a great one.
Oh, it has all the makings of being a barn burner. And let's talk about the road to this week for Seattle. Actually, going back to the beginning of the season, there were some question marks. There were some bumps in the road the first few weeks of the season, but it seems like the defense has gotten its act together. Marshawn Lynch is starting to get the running game going a little bit. What's the mood? What's the vibe up there in Seattle with the way your team's performing, where they're, not really in the race for a Western Division championship, at least at this point in time, depending on if Arizona completely collapses, which is possible right now. And the state of play there in Seattle through 12 weeks.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's certainly a lot more buoyant right now. After the first couple of weeks of the season, it kind of looked like that maybe the Seahawks were falling back to the pack, so to speak, just because of the fact that they had lost so many players through free agency. Of course, the surprising trade of Percy Harvin, all of the talk of a fractured locker room, all of those types of things. But instead, there has been a very impressive couple of victories. Obviously, the home win against the Arizona Cardinals, as you mentioned, still the division leader. So the win over Arizona, the win last week over San Francisco, both times allowing the opponents only to score 3 points. So certainly the defense has come back. And I think that this is just a reflection of the fact that Seattle is getting healthier on the defensive side of the football. The loss of their defensive tackle, Brandon Mebane, is certainly a significant one. But at the same time, the return to health of the middle linebacker, Bobby Wagner, as well as the strong safety Cam Chancellor, has just added to Seattle's speed and physicality. And so they walk into Philadelphia rolling right now. And I think that's one of the reasons why this does look like such an exciting matchup, because the Seahawks have not yet faced a team that has Philadelphia's combination of scheme as well as speed. So I'm really excited to see exactly how this one entails.
How are the Seahawks preparing, like you mentioned, for the schemes that Philadelphia puts in place with the tempo offense that Chip Kelly runs? I know Chip Kelly, when he was at Oregon, spent time visiting with the Seahawks in his coaching days for a day or two. He's seen Russell Wilson before in the past. How are your guys preparing for what is to come 3,000 miles away in Philadelphia Sunday?
Well, I think the biggest thing is because Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly have some background together, as you mentioned, they coached in three different games against each other, so there is going to be some familiarity there. And, of course, with that read option, Seattle runs a little bit of that as well, so it's not going to be quite as different, I think, as those outside the national media might portray it. Obviously, you have a different element of speed that the Philadelphia Eagles present, and that really is going to be the difference, I believe, for the Seahawks, is they just have not faced a team
with the speed that, that Philadelphia has. Obviously, when you have a superstar running back like LeSean McCoy, you know, everybody's going to talk about him, but as you guys well know, when McCoy comes off the field, or even sometimes when he is on the field, you still have Darren Sproles you have to worry about at the running back position. And that is something that Seattle has struggled with a little bit in weeks in the past. Two of the Seahawks' road losses this year were to the Kansas City Chiefs, who, of course, have Jamaal Charles, and Jamaal Charles ran all over Seattle. And then even in the surprising divisional loss to St. Louis, the rookie Trey Mason from Auburn, who isn't as fast as either Darren Sproles or certainly LeSean McCoy, but still Seattle struggled with him. So to me, that's really going to be the question. It's not so much about the tempo. I think that Seattle rotates enough defensive linemen in that you're going. That I think that Seattle is going to be good enough and physically fit enough to be able to handle that type of transition. But it's going to be the speed of Philadelphia's running backs and as well as the versatility of their slot receivers and tight ends. Those are some areas that the Seahawks have been vulnerable in the past. And, of course, with the myriad of weapons that the Eagles have at those positions, that's very much going to be a challenge for the Seahawks.
Rob, this is Mike McShane. It sounds like what you're telling me, though, is it really is the running game that Seattle probably would be keying on more than anything else. That's what it sounds to me like. If there's one area you sound a little nervous, it might be right there.
Well, absolutely. I think just because of the fact that no disrespect to Mark Sanchez. I actually was higher on him when he came out of Southern Cal than a lot of people were, and frankly, I thought he got a little bit of a raw deal with how his career ended in New York. But I do believe that obviously with Pete Carroll, knowing Mark Sanchez as well as any coach perhaps in the NFL other than Chip Kelly, then I do think that Seattle is going to be able to come into this game a little bit better prepared to handle Mark Sanchez specifically than perhaps some other teams would do. And then, of course, the Seahawks, you know, kind of hang their hat on that Legion of Boom, their secondary, which is healthy. Now that they have Cam Chancellor back, Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman, despite what some others out there might be saying, you know, having watched it up close and personal throughout their respective NFL careers, I can tell you that they're having as good of years or better this year than they had previously. So, you know, certainly if Philadelphia is able to beat Seattle through the air, then, you know, tip of the cap to the Philadelphia Eagles, but that's something that the Seahawks feel very confident in. And so I think that's going to be a fascinating matchup in that regard.
One of the analyses that I kind of did myself here over the past couple of days in taking a look at this matchup, and as you just said, I don't mean any disrespect to your receivers, but the bottom line is it really appears to me that your offense is built around a running game as well. The Eagles suddenly are up to 12th in defenses across the league against the run. We did a pretty good job of shutting down DeMarco Murray last week in Dallas. What's the thinking right now if we're able to do the same thing to, say, Marshawn Lynch and your quarterback there? What that's going to change that game plan up, I would think, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Philadelphia is able to control the line of scrimmage as well against Seattle as they did last week against Dallas, then the Seahawks are absolutely going to struggle in this football game. The Seahawks wide receivers, I believe, are a little bit better than some of their parts. They don't have the dynamic, game-changing number one wide receiver. They don't have the jitterbug type of a guy who can make people miss and go for 80 yards. Now, of course, is one of the reasons why they made the trade for Percy Harvin. But at the same time, they are guys who are, you know, reliable and get open, and they seem to know where the sticks are. And that is a kind of the calling card of this team. Of course, the Seahawks were as successful as they were a year ago, obviously, at winning the Super Bowl. Most of that was then without Percy Harvin. So this is a group that has been very successful in the past, and you said it. I mean, you know, this is a group that that does rely on their ability in the running game. And so much of it is Marshawn Lynch, but a big part of it is also Russell Wilson. Be able to use that read option, he has incredible spatial awareness. In my experience in grading college players going up to the NFL draft, one of the things that is so rare about Russell Wilson is he, especially for a shorter quarterback, he seems like he has eyes in the back of his head. He's very rarely hitting from behind or loses the football for a smaller guy. He can see where the defensive players are and be able to make adjustments. So it's one of it really is the kind of the calling card that has helped the Seahawks be as successful as they are. Is that Russell Wilson simply does not turn the ball over. And so I think when you use that ground control type of attack, that's what's helped them be successful.
Talking with Rob Rang from SeahawkFootball.com on Inside the War Nest, Jim Williams with Michael McShane. And Rob, to that point, somebody in our chat room earlier in the program mentioned and raised the question, Russell Wilson, what he does on the ground, averaging 7.5 yards per attempt, Marshawn Lynch averaging almost 5 yards per attempt. Are they the best 1-2 rushing tandem in football? What do you think?
Let's see. I think that they certainly would rank among them. You know, I think that LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles are right up in there in that mix. You know, I think that the Seahawks certainly, with the running back and quarterback combination, that you'd have to say that it is. The only one, frankly, I think it would be close to that would be, you know, in San Francisco, when they essentially have a three-headed monster with Frank Gore, the rookie Carlos Hyde, and, of course, Colin Kaepernick. But even with Colin Kaepernick, a guy like Kaepernick, he's dynamic in that he has that explosive acceleration. I mean, when he gets the open field, he's gone. But he doesn't have that lateral agility to be able to make people miss, and he's not as accurate in the pocket. And that's one of the things that Wilson is so good at, is that I've seen a million quarterbacks, and Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin being two prominent examples of quarterbacks that while they're on the move, they can still make the accurate pass, but when they're hemmed in the pocket, that's where they start to struggle a little bit. That is really one of the areas in which Russell Wilson excels. He does have terrific accuracy from the pocket. He truly is a dual-threat passer. At the same time, because, as you guys mentioned, the Seahawks do not have dynamic receivers, it doesn't matter how accurate he is, because they have to be able to make defenders miss to be able to create the big play. And so what Seattle has been very effective at doing is getting kind of yardage in 8 to 10 to 12 yard chunks and then be able to rely on their running game. If, as you guys suggest, that the Seahawks are not able to run the ball effectively, then I don't think that's going to be a recipe for success, especially at the length.
From all accounts, as far as I'm concerned, this game may hinge on special teams. And you've got two great kickers, Hauschka there in Seattle, and of course, you've got Cody Parkey here for Philadelphia. And when you think special teams, and you brought his name up, Darren Sproles, how are the Seahawks preparing to face a special teams unit that has been lights out insane this year, getting touchdowns almost every way imaginable?
That is, to me, is absolutely one of the hidden factors in this game, and I'm happy that you mentioned it, because that's something, frankly, that Seattle has struggled with this year. I mentioned the two losses earlier to Kansas City and St. Louis, and I mentioned those specifically because of those dynamic backs that we had talked about, but also those were the two games in which Seattle was absolutely destroyed on special teams. Against St. Louis, it was a fake punt, it was a just all kinds of mistakes. They were a return for a touchdown that killed the Seahawks. Against the Kansas City Chiefs, they also had some big returns. And so if Philadelphia is as good this upcoming Sunday on special teams as they have been all year long, then I think that could be a significant advantage for the Philadelphia Eagles. And so that is the one area that I would be surprised if the Seahawks aren't absolutely stressing right now inside their homes, inside their facility, is making sure that they are indeed prepared for not only Philadelphia's return game, but also their punting ability and their ability to hit those long-distance field goals. Those are some areas that Seattle has struggled with this season.
Rob, some people in Philadelphia here, and I'm not one of them, I'm just going to cite some things that I've heard. Some analysts here in Philadelphia have indicated that, well, the Seattle Seahawks, they're really not all that, you know, they're not all that. I mean, look, they were 3-3 at one point in the season, and they managed to pad their schedule against a couple of easy wins against some teams that are really questionable in the Panthers, Raiders, and Giants. You know, it's amazing. The team goes out early on in the season, and rather surprisingly for me, anyhow, I didn't expect it. I thought the Broncos would win. They hand the Broncos a loss and yet turn around and lose to a team like the Rams. Was that just early season stuff, or have they gotten past that now? You know what?
I do believe they have gotten past some of those issues. The St. Louis Rams are an interesting team. I mean, if you think about the teams that the Rams have beaten, they've beaten the Denver Broncos.
Yep.
They beat the 49ers. They obviously beat the Seahawks as well. So they're an interesting team. You know, the Seahawks, as you mentioned, certainly they, at the same time, they shouldn't have lost the St. Louis Rams. You know, the games against Oakland and the Giants, you know, they should have been even more blowouts than at times that they look. You know, I think that this is a team that really is not nearly as deep as they were a year ago when they went to the Super Bowl. I mean, yeah, that was one of the most impressive things. They lost a starter. You'd throw in a backup, and he'd play every bit as well as the starter did. And that has certainly not been the case this year. Like, for example, Seattle has a backup center, Lemuel Jean-Pierre, and he is nowhere nearly as good and as reliable as the starter, a Pro Bowler, Max Unger. And, of course, Philadelphia has had their injury issues along the offensive line. And, again, it's tip of the cap to Chip Kelly and his staff,
yep,
on the talent in Philadelphia. They've been able to handle those types of injuries. So I think those are all valid reasons why Seattle has struggled a little bit. At the same time, I would also point out the fact that the Seahawks have been pretty successful against some of the top teams that they've played, that,
yeah,
they faced so,
yeah,
far this year. You mentioned Denver, obviously Green Bay, and then you know, the fact that they had those two wins, and then of course the way that they're playing right now these last 2 weeks, you could argue that the Arizona Cardinals, San Francisco 49ers, were two of the toughest teams on their schedule, and to be able to beat them as emphatically as they did, the Seahawks are walking into this game as confident as they've been ever since the Super Bowl, and that again is why I think that this sets up for truly one of the season's best games.
It absolutely does. To be fair, let me interject for a sec, Mike. Mike,
yep,
was asking about and mentioned that he thought the Broncos were going to beat your Seahawks. To be fair, in the interest of fairness, there's a reason why Mike thought that. It's because when it comes to Mike's love of all things Peyton Manning, it is a ridiculous sort of...
Man crush.
I have to, in the interest of fairness, point that out.
You always have to destroy my journalistic integrity there, Williams. I don't know.
You're the one who put the sound on the soundboard, bro. So come on now. Not my doing. Let me ask you about Marshawn Lynch. I just checked the injury report that just went up from Seahawks.com. Did not practice today with a back injury. And let me go further. The rumors have been speculating over the last week or so that he may retire at the end of this season. Do you put any stock whatsoever into those rumors?
Well, I think there's certainly a possibility. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, while he has shown incredible toughness and is fighting through some of these injuries, you know, he has been a very durable player since the Seahawks made the trade with the Buffalo Bills to acquire him. I think he's only missed a handful of games over those 4 years. At the same time, there have been times where, you know, where he has stayed on the sidelines during halftime to receive treatment on his back. And just the physicality with which he plays, I think it is going to lend itself to his breaking down physically at some point. And then, frankly, I think that there has been some issues in terms of his contract. He is signed for this year. He signed through next year.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been a lot of speculation that the Seahawks might be looking to release him,
right,
after this year and be able to get back some of that money because Russell Wilson, of course, is going to be due his big contract. And with a contract I certainly expect to be the biggest in Seahawks history. So,
right,
I don't anticipate that he is going to be retiring after this year, but if the Seahawks let him go and he does not get the big contract from another franchise that he expects, I think that there is a possibility. So at this point, the best thing for both sides, the Seahawks and Marshawn Lynch, of course, is just to play with the same ferocity that he has throughout his career, and I certainly anticipate that's going to be the case the rest of the season.
What's your fan base up there thinking about this weekend's game? Are they nervous?
Well, I think they're nervous, absolutely. I mean, the Philadelphia Eagles are a quality opponent, and the Seahawks have struggled on the road. That's been a case, that's been an issue, you know, frankly, for the entire franchise's history. I mean, obviously, when you're traveling from one corner of the country to another, then that is going to be an issue at the same time.
Right.
You know, because the Seahawks are playing as well as they are the last couple of weeks, and there is a great deal of excitement, more excitement probably than there has been all year long, except
mm-hmm.
for maybe at that first opening couple of weeks against Denver and against Green Bay. But also the fact that the Seahawks are a little healthier than they have been. And so there is a sense that even if they lost this game, that still the Seahawks are kind of building up to something, because as you mentioned earlier, the Arizona Cardinals right now look like a team that might be falling apart, and so therefore there's a belief that the NFC West is a division that's still very much up for grabs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. No
Taking
doubt
a look,
about that one.
I'm going to beat Mike to the punch on the degenerate gambling line here, as I like to do every now and again. Philadelphia currently a point and a half favorite, maybe two depending on where you decide to do your gambling. And by the way, we don't condone it. BTR cares. Okay. But it's a pick 'em game. It's the epitome of a pick 'em game. Philadelphia isn't even getting the home line. We always ask our guests for a prediction. What is your prediction on what's going to happen Sunday come 4:25 Eastern time?
A prediction. I hadn't really thought about an actual score. You know, I think that this is
going
to be...
Well, you don't have to give an actual score, but just tell me where you see the chips falling.
Well, I certainly don't want to get myself shot in the streets of Seattle by a case.
<Uh-oh. laughs> I understand. Well, no, the only reason I say that, we've had people come on and pick Philadelphia from behind enemy lines. So it's okay if you we don't bite over here. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's in all due respect to the Eagles. I think that they are absolutely a fantastic franchise, and the fact that this game is in Philadelphia, I think it is a significant factor. And again, just to reiterate, I love the fact that you mentioned the special teams. That to me is where I think this game could change. The way that the Seahawks are playing right now, I think that they are physically able to beat the Eagles and physically be able to handle the tempo and Chip Kelly's scheme as well as Philadelphia's talent. That said, I would not be surprised at all to see a big play on special teams be the unraveling of the Seahawks. I'm going to go with the Seahawks winning this game, but I do think that the special teams could absolutely play the critical role and could result in the Seahawks losing this one.
You think it's a high-scoring affair?
I don't think it's going to be as high-scoring as people think. I think, again, Seattle's physicality on defense, I believe, is going to be able to slow down Philadelphia's offense. I do think that you are going to see a couple of big plays be the turning point in this game. I don't think that you're going to see a lot of turnovers. I think that the Mark Sanchez is a quality quarterback. Obviously, I love the talent that Philadelphia has. We talk so much about LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles, and you know, I mean, all the tight ends, all the receivers. I mean, the rookie receiver Jordan Matthews is obviously stepping up his play at this point. He is a bigger receiver than Seattle is accustomed to seeing in the slot, so that's going to be fascinating. But at the same time, I think this is going to be one of those games where it's going to come down to the special teams, like you mentioned. And that's where I think that this game is going to wind up being one of those, you know, 20-17 kind of a games, rather than the 35-30 type of thing that Seattle, frankly, I don't believe is likely to score. And against Seattle's defense, if as healthy as they are, I don't believe Philadelphia can be able to score that kind of points either.
Consider for a moment that the Seattle Seahawks this season right now are 1-4 when their opposition has scored 21 points or more against them. The Eagles right now are averaging 26 points something. So this is going to come down to the defense is what it's going to come down to.
Yep.
I
would tend to agree.
Yeah.
Quickly, Rob, tell us about all the offerings you have. I know you've been kind of a busy guy the last couple of days doing a lot of interviews on shows like this. What do you have up at SeahawkFootball.com that Eagles fans may want to take a look at?
Well, you know, we've done a couple of interviews, as you mentioned, with some of the local Seattle radio out here, kind of previewing this game. And then, you know, we had some 5 questions that with you guys that I'm anxious to throw those answers up in terms of trying to do kind of our, I call it speaking with the enemy rather than behind enemy lines, but the same kind of idea, just being able to try and get into your guys' heads and see things from the Eagles' perspective. As we get a little closer to the game itself, then I'll write up my 3 key matchups, and that's where I try and find individual matchups that aren't, you know, the obvious ones, Russell Wilson against the Eagles defense or things of that nature, rather either specific offensive lineman versus specific defensive lineman or things of that nature. You know, I think that absolutely, again, the special teams is going to play a factor in this, and that's something that I'm going to be talking about and then just trying to get those forums going. We're just starting at SeahawkFootball.com. I'm proud to be part of the Scout Network, and very excited to be talking with you guys. I look forward to talking with you not only, you know, before or after or during this game itself, but also should the two teams meet sometime in the NFC playoffs.
Absolutely. We would love to have you back on here, and maybe we'll, you know, nod on over to the forum. If you guys come over to ours, you know, we scratch your back, you scratch ours. It's all good. It's all good here.
Absolutely.
We're the Scout.com family here. Come on now. It's all good.
Well, and birds of a different feather in this one, so to speak. So, you know, we can kind of see how that works.
Yes, but ultimately we do flock together. We're not as bad as people think, according to – I don't boo Santa Claus. I don't throw snowballs at people because I've been hit in the face by an ice ball. It's not pretty. Trust me. Rob Ryan joining us from SeahawkFootball.com. Enjoy the rest of the week leading up to this big game Sunday, and thanks for joining us here inside the War Nest.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
You got it, Rob. Thank you.
We'll talk with you soon, I hope. All right,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Man. Bye-bye.
Rob Rang from SeahawkFootball.com joining us inside the War Nest. Good stuff. Lots of good information from him. And
yep.
He brought up something. I should have told him this. Maybe he's still listening. One matchup, one you talk about a specific individual, somebody who's played very, very well in the offensive line, Andrew Gardner for Philadelphia. He started the last couple of games because we still have four fits of an offensive line from last year.
Right.
He's really done a good job, and I think he may be part of the reason why McCoy's been running better, because he's doing a good job blocking up front. He's protecting Mark Sanchez. You want to give him some props on here, too. So I thought I might do that, and I just did. So there you go.
Yeah, good point, too. He was responsible there for making a couple of those holes that McCoy got through the other day.
Absolutely, and I would have no question of him starting again against Seattle on Sunday.
I wouldn't either.
Mentioned the injury report. I mentioned Lynch did not practice for Seattle. A couple of noteworthy injuries on the Philadelphia side of things. Well, first and foremost, on the plus side, Emmanuel Acho was a full participant in practice today. So it looks like all signs are he's going to be back, which will be a plus. I gave Casey Matthews, I always give him the business, but I got to say he stepped his game up in Dallas. He recorded a sack, for goodness sakes. So I got to lay off him a little bit. Chris Polk, coming off an ankle injury from Dallas, he was limited in practice. And Cody Parkey with a nagging right groin injury, he was limited in practice. In the press conference Wednesday, Chip Kelly saying that, you know, that might have affected him on kickoffs, not so much on field goal attempts, but every little aspect of special teams in this kind of game is going to matter. I'm very, very convinced of that. Remaining moments left before we get to our prediction of the game. Let's talk a little bit about the 800-pound pink elephant in the room, or actually it's a blue, orange, and green one from Gainesville.
Yep.
Over the weekend, it was broken by Sports Illustrated and by our own Justin Henry that the folks at the University of Florida were looking to get in contact with Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly, in his Wednesday morning press conference, refuted this statement, saying it's funny and that we should all dismiss it. He has not been contacted as of yet. Keep in mind, not even 2 years ago, he refuted various things when he was at Oregon, only to leave Oregon for Philadelphia. You hear this news, is that moment when he left Oregon, denied things, saying, I'm going to stay at Oregon, and then bolding Oregon, did that at least matriculate in the back of your mind just a little bit?
I think we know why he left Oregon. Let's get
because the Pac-12, nobody gets respect there.
Well, I think, too, they were just about to be sanctioned. So that's always been quite a little bit of the theory there. If I'm not mistaken, though, the timeline on that, Jim, was that did he not actually – I'm trying to remember how exactly this worked. He told the Eagles he was not interested, went back to Oregon, said, I'm not going anywhere, and then changed his tune.
That's about right, yeah.
I think that's the way it went. It went, he told the Eagles no, told Oregon yes, but then later on went to the Eagles and said, oh, I've changed my mind. Oregon, sorry, too bad.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question here, because, again, I heard Chip Kelly's comments from this morning. What do you make of it? Do you believe him?
I believe that he hasn't been in contact with them yet. I know they're going to talk. That's a foregone conclusion. You have too many sources who are fairly credible saying Florida wants a piece of Chip Kelly, and that's understandable. The only aspect that differs here is that the Eagles structured a contract in such a way where there would have to be a lot of money at stake. There would be a lot of money lost out for Kelly to go back to the college ranks. And right now, I don't see any reason for him to do so. I mean, he's on the uptick. He's on the upswing right now. I mean, the team's going to exceed more than likely their win total from last year. They may be in a better seed for the playoffs, maybe another division championship. They're certainly in control of their own fate. I don't think he can necessarily resurrect a Florida program that's been in shambles ever since the old ball coach left. Mm-hmm. I don't think he can be the right guy for that. Maybe he can, but I don't follow enough college football to be a viable, credible source on that matter. I take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. I never say never when it comes to such things because, again, like I said, he burned Oregon. He didn't burn it. He napalmed that bridge to the ground. I don't think he would do it here in Philadelphia because the backlash would be extraordinary. You think the people in Oregon are upset. I have a friend. Shout out to Joe Benson if by weird happenstance he's listening. I have a friend in Oregon who knows what the fallout was like. And, you know, if you thought that was something, the fallout here in Philadelphia would be about 1,000 times more.
He could never show – he wouldn't be able to show his face inside of the tri-state area.
Rich Kotite would have a better chance of showing his face.
I would agree with you.
Interestingly, nobody wants to see that face. Yeah.
Here's where I come down on the whole, you know, is he, isn't he conversation.
Okay.
First of all, you got three big programs right now that are open in college football. There might actually be one or two more that might open up yet. But the three big ones that we know of are the Gators, as you just mentioned, the Wolverines and Nebraska, the Cornhuskers.
Yeah.
Now, the Wolverines and Nebraska are both Big Ten schools. And I can tell you right now that the Chip Kelly mentality, philosophy, I don't think it's going to work with a Big Ten school, and it's certainly, I know enough about Michigan, it's not going to work with the Wolverines.
Yeah, they're too traditional.
So the Gators, it would marry itself nicely with the Gators concept. Mm-hmm. Did Chip Kelly tell me anything today to alleviate my concern that he might? No, and that's what's got me concerned.
Yeah,
I wish he would have been a lot more forthright about his denial that he wasn't going anywhere. To simply dismiss it or be dismissive and just kind of brush it away and go, oh, it's silly. First of all, give me a better word than silly, Chip, okay? Give me a stronger word than silly because I don't like silly. I'm not buying it, okay? And that's where I think that I was a little bit taken aback by it. Are the Gators reaching out to him? Are they going to? Listen, they'd be foolish not to. I think Michigan – and Nebraska would be foolish not to. I think you always look into every possibility, although I just don't think that his game style would work in a Big Ten school.
I would tend to agree with you. They seem to be a different beast altogether. I would tend to agree with that. But then again, also, when you go back to the words that Kelly said during the press conference, that's vintage Chip Kelly. He plays everything way too close to the vest for anybody's liking. He's always been secretive, and he won't give you a tell. It's like he'd be the perfect poker player. Maybe he missed his calling in life. I don't know. But we'll follow it. We'll follow it and see if there are any legs with it.
I understand, except we're not talking – here we're not talking about injury reports.
Right. We're not talking
Andy Reid, that's
breakfast.
All he ever would. Right. All Andy Reid ever wanted to talk about were injured guys. That's all he ever wanted to talk about.
I need to get that sound on the soundboard for you. I need to get, start with the injuries. We need to get that on the soundboard.
Exactly. Yeah, find that one. Okay. We're not talking, this wasn't a question about, you know, what's Cody Parkey's situation today. Okay. It was a question about him personally and his relationship with the city and this team. And I think he could have been, you don't have to play that one. That one, you're not doing yourself a favor playing that one close to the vest.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Let's go to it. We talked with Rob Rang. He gave us a lot of information to digest in the 20 or so minutes we talked with him. Eagles Seahawks. It's going to be a great game, 4:25 Eastern on Fox and at the Link in South Philadelphia. And I tell you, I thank the heavens above and the football schedule makers for making sure that this game wasn't played in Seattle, because if it was played in Seattle, I would go with Seattle in a heartbeat. It's played in Philadelphia, though, with two good teams, two teams that are trying to prove they're more than quote-unquote second-tier playoff teams. And yes, the Seahawks are kind of in that boat with the record they're in right now, behind the pace in the division. Mike, I'll go to you first. Give me a prediction, give me a score, and give me a why and how of it all.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that jump out at me. First of all, it's not just the line, it's both lines.
Yeah, the over-under, which I didn't mention, which is 48.
You got it. The over-under on this one is a bit odd, because the over-under is 48.5. Now, you know, we just heard Rob say that, you know, he doesn't think it's going to be as high as most people think. I don't think most people think it's going to be high. And we know from Vegas, they're not thinking it's high. They're looking at this as being a low-scoring game. Then, on top of that, they're making the Eagles simply a 1 to 1.5-point favorite. Vegas is telling you this is all in favor of the Seattle Seahawks. As I pointed out in my statistic to Rob, the Seahawks are 1-4 this season when their opponents outscore them by 21 points or more. Vegas is even saying, even this high-powered offense from the Philadelphia Eagles is not going to score 21. And they're saying that in the over-under. I don't like the Eagles in this game this week, and I'm going to pick the Seattle Seahawks, 21-15.
Ooh. The key number, as I always mention on this show, is 30. If the Eagles get 30 or more points, more than likely they're going to win a football game. In fact, that's all they've done this year.
And statistically, that would be proven to be correct here in this case as well.
Yeah. They don't get to 30 this week, but I have a funny feeling they win it, and I think special teams, as we talked about with Rob, is going to be the difference. I expect another either fumble, recovery for a touchdown, or return. Sproles takes one to the house for a touchdown. I think the Eagles win it. They don't get to 30 points. They get to 27. I'll say 27-23 Philadelphia. It won't be easy. It won't be pretty, but the Eagles will squeak by. So I'm taking the over. I'm a rebel.
There we go.
There you go. So 27-23 Eagles for me, and Mike with a, what was it again? 21-15. 21-15 Seattle. So there you go. Those are our picks. One of us is going to be right. One of us is going to be wrong, unless they tie, and then we're all screwed.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
please.
So I'm in a fantasy football league.
It would probably help us in the NFC East.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it actually would. Keep in mind, I'm in a fantasy football league where one team tied twice this season. So
I hope it wasn't the same team. Was it the same team?
It was.
God.
Oh, no, not against the same team. No, there are a couple of teams with one tie. And there were a few ties this season in the one league. So very, very interesting. But I'm not in the playoffs in that league. But I am in the playoffs in the Frat House Sports League.
Yes, you are. 1 of 8.
And who did I beat to seal the deal last week? You remember?
Well, you were interdivision. Who did you beat?
I believe it was somebody we know and are quite acquainted with on Frat House Sports. Some guy from St. Louis, perhaps, that I faced last week.
Dave? Okay.
No, from St. Louis, yeah. Some guy named Sidekick. You may have heard of him.
That's right, you did. I'm looking now. Yes, you beat Sidekick, yes.
How you doing, Sidekick? How you doing?
He was trying to tell us that he was purposely trying to tank all season to get the better draft pick for the beginning of next year, but we were actually rooting for him to beat you and get into the playoffs, because if he had won, he had a good shot at making the playoffs.
Yeah, well... Sorry I ruined that for you. I apologize.
You were guaranteed. You were going to get in.
Well, yeah,
you
I know. But
I
any chance I could, you know, kick Sidekick.
Oh,
you
to get Sidekick. I know.
After everything he did to me last year, come on. Turn about a spare play for once. But that's fun. That's exciting.
We have a big league. We have a big league over here at Frat House. 16 teams in our
absolutely.
League.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the playoffs are starting in a lot of other leagues. We wish you all the best of luck in those. And we hope you'll join us this time next week, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time, for the newest installment of Inside the War Nest. We hope to have Jordan Ross join us one more time. I think he's going to. He seemed more than amicable with us the first time around. It'll be neat.
We could do a little post-mortem.
We can do a postmortem, and of course, you know, Thursday night the Cowboys play the Bears on Thursday Night Football. That's going to be an intriguing game, because you've got two teams who have something to play for, sort of, kind of. Well, the Bears are looking to save face, while the Cowboys are looking to, well, in all honesty, they're looking to save face too, because for goodness sake, NFL Network this week has been putting on the whole Five Faces of Romo bit, where they look at the many dimensions that are Tony Romo. He's the hero. He's the underdog. I think tonight he's going to be the fourth quarter failure. I'm not sure. But
yeah, well, they could follow that with the 10 faces of Jay Cutler, please.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. They don't have enough dye.
I agree.
I should say, for Jay Cutler.
Right, now, Dallas is a 3.5-point favorite.
Well, always the gambling. Always. How much money are you putting on this
game? Got it right here in front of me. What can I tell you? I got them all. I got them all right here.
You're a piece of work, my friend. You're a piece of work. I mean that in the nicest possible way. But we'll talk with Jordan Ross next week from CowboysHQ.com. He's scheduled to join us. We'll also hopefully talk with all of you either on the chat or on the phone. Don't be shy. We're here to talk. If you have questions or comments, leave them with us. Also, friendly reminder, I haven't mentioned this in a while. You want to be a premium member at WarNest.com because you get premium access to all the Scout.com sites, including the Eagles one, so you can get inside statistical information. Justin Henry, gotta give him props. He crunches the numbers like it's nobody's business and comes up with incredible information, stuff you won't find on the interwebs unless you sign up for the premium service. And if you buy the yearly package, it's less than $7 a month. That's only a few cups of coffee, and coffee's crappy these days, especially if you go to convenience stores. So, you know, it's worth it. And if that wasn't reason enough, if you want to get to a game this season, and yes, tickets are still available, folks, being a premium member has its privileges. You will save 10% on tickets, 10% on all tickets the rest of the season, home or away games for the Eagles. And also, you can save on Phillies tickets, too. I shouldn't say that, but I just did.
I heard they were giving them away this year.
No, that's Sixers. That's the Sixers. We got to get going because, Mike, right now they're going for history. They're going for history. They're going for the
They're playing the Timberwolves. They're going to win.
No. No, they're not. No.
Outright.
Outright? I got nothing to
what
say
were they
to that
giving
aside.
What were they giving them away on the other day? What was that? What was that I gave to you? They're giving them away. The tickets were being given away on what? What boxes?
Kraft mac and cheese.
That's what it was. Kraft macaroni and cheese. There you go.
Kraft mac and cheese. What will they think of next? You know what I mean? You give away. Oh my goodness! They only had 9,000 at the last home game.
Let's see. Was that for a particular game or was that for a game of your choice? I think that's for a game of your choice.
It probably
so there's
has
no way
to
be able.
That's the only way.
Yeah, but there's no way to be able to determine whether your promotion worked or not.
Well, does it really matter as long as they have a few people in the seats to watch the game? And to think I was almost their announcer, folks, and I think I made the right move.
Do you believe we're sitting here talking about the Sixers? Oh, my God.
Well, they need the ink because nobody else is going to give it to them, especially their flagship station in Philadelphia. But enough about them.
What's the scout affiliate for the Sixers?
Oh, hold on. You know what? We're going extra time. Hold on a second. Let's find this out. Oh, I don't think there is a scout site for them. Hold on a second.
We need to get a rep on the air with us for the end of next week's show from the Sixers scout website.
There is no Sixers scout site. There's just a
forum. No.
Yeah, Scout even knows this team's really crappy, folks. Actually, no, it's because Scout doesn't do the NBA. That's why. So I did not know that until just now, but... you know what? I say you and I will do it. It'll be tankymclotto.com. That's what it'll be, tankymclotto.com.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I wish I could take credit for it. We're not tankymclottoing here. We're on our way to a division championship, I hope, and hopefully to a win over Seattle, and we hope you'll join us next week. For Mike McShane, I'm Jim Williams. Go Eagles, and we'll see you 1 week from now for the newest edition of Inside the War Nest. So long, everybody. Thanks for just joining us.